It's the most all-star studded challenge ever. And this time, it's every competitor for themselves.
Best challenge ever!
The Challenge All-Stars. New season now streaming on Paramount Plus. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.
Welcome to another podcast from InsideCarolina.com, the independent voice of UNC Sports. Brought to you by JohnnyT-Shirt.com, the go-to provider for all your Tar Heel gear.
Welcome to the Inside Carolina podcast. I'm hosting this one, John Siegley. We are sponsored, as always, by Johnny T-Shirt and JohnnyT-Shirt.com. We got a very special roundtable episode. We've got the crew assembled of Mike Ingersoll, Jason Staples, Tommy Ashley, and Buck Sanders going to be giving our thoughts on the football season that was. Going to go ahead and start this one off, though, by handing the floor over to Mr. Buck Sanders, who I believe has a bone to pick with Mr. Mike Ingersoll about his preseason selection for what he thought the record would be. So, Buck, let's go ahead and clear the air. What do you have to say to old Ingersoll here?
Well, you know, after I got to tabulating everything, I did remember when we did the podcast that Ingersoll was the only one that predicted that North Carolina would not go bowling. Everybody else had North Carolina at least at 6-6. Ingersoll was the only exception, I thought. But actually, Ross Martin also checked in at 5-7. But after I also did the calculations, Ross was more right game by game than I was or anybody else was. Ross was. He had 7 right head-to-head, and I only had 6 right. Jason had 5 right, and the winner, ding, 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 Tommy Ashley, checking in with 8 straight-up predictions from our preseason forecast. So, but Mike did just as well as I did. He picked 6, I picked 6, although the ones that he picked game by game, he and Ross only had us at 5-7. Everybody else had a winning season. So it wasn't as much of a bone to pick as I thought it was after I did the math.
Well, let me jump in real quick because Ingersoll's been on fire here talking before we got started, got recording with John being our gracious host. Mike, you picked Carolina loser state.
Yeah.
And that didn't happen. I'm curious as to how you can utter those words.
Everybody picks state to win, Tommy.
Damn it, Buck. Nobody remembers what we talked about back then.
I went back. I was late to this podcast. I'm going to give full disclosure. But earlier, I did go back and listen to the entire preseason podcast, as painful as that was. Every single one of us picked NC State to win.
We all knew they were going to be terrible, though.
And before we knew that we had all world at quarterback, at all 6'1" of them. And
oh, come on, he's not 6'1".
Laser rocket arm and 98,000 passing yards and freshman touchdown records. And I mean, we didn't know that was going to happen either. So,
well, that's just something to keep in mind when we do preseason podcasts that, there's a lot of things that happen during the season we have no way of foreseeing. So that's the way that cookie crumbles.
I'll say this and bring Jason into it. And John, I'm usurping your power here.
How dare you?
I will say this. 6-6, I think, is a very good season for North Carolina, but all 6-6s are not alike. And I think this version of 6-6 for North Carolina was as good as it possibly could be.
According to Buck, it was a winning season.
Where did I say that?
At the tail end of your opening remarks, counselor.
That was our predictions. Remember. Our predictions.
Oh, yeah. Those were our predictions. All of us predicted a bowl game. In other words,
someone have the court reporter read the transcript back, please.
Yeah, I read the transcript earlier today, but all of us predicted the ball.
I've been reading the tea leaves all season. Well,
so there you go,
Jason. 6-6. Carolina's version is 6-6. That's pretty solid success, right?
I felt like going to a bowl this season would be a success. I mean, we talked about that on the opening podcast. It's, you know, 7-5 was probably we all felt that that was going to be optimistic, and that 6-6 was probably the realistic target, and that's what we hit. You know, that's what we saw. And the thing was, as has already been said, this 6-6 was better than expected, because it was a 6-6 where you lose by one to Clemson. I mean, all of us had talked about, like, we didn't even talk about that game. Like, well, they're going to lose to Clemson because, well, they dang near beat Clemson. There are a couple other of those losses that really easily could have been wins. Now, granted, there were a lot of wins that could have been losses. I mean, the crazy thing is, against the Power Five opponents going into the NC State game, you realize that Carolina had scored exactly the number of points that their opponents had scored on the season going into the NC State game. I mean, it was exactly the same number of points scored. That's how on the margin this season was. So you're not just talking 6-6, you're talking competitive in every game. I mean, but the thing is, when you beat a South Carolina team that beat Georgia, when you take Clemson to the wire, what you're seeing is a step forward in terms of the quality of play. It's not just about the six wins. It's about the quality of play on the field and reestablishing some cultural movement and how to prepare, how to play to a certain standard. And they got a lot closer to that than just the 6-6 record would suggest, I think. So that, I think, is a major win for the staff. And I think if you had the truth serum to put into the staff this before this season, and you said, and then you asked them, okay, what's your realistic goal? I suspect they'd have said, look, if we make a bowl this year, we had a good year. And I suspect at the beginning of the year, they would have said that. Now, that's not what they're going to say to their players. That's not what they're going to push for. That's not what your goal is. But getting the 15 bowl practices, being able to show progress to the recruits, all of that stuff, and also going out with a throttling of NC State on their home field, which basically you're able to put your stamp on the end of the season and say, we're back. Mac is running the flagship program. Who wants in? That's completely a successful season.
All right, so let's do this. Let's try to quantify the season. Let's give it the traditional rating 1 out of 10. Jason, since you were just going, go ahead and start with you. What would you give it 1 out of 10, and give just a sentence or two of explanation? And we'll just go around the room getting everyone's thoughts for that.
Okay, and I'm actually going to add a corollary to this. And that is, it's 1 out of 10, but nobody can vote, or nobody can say 7.
Okay, that's fair.
Because the tendency, anytime you give a 1 to 10 and you want to kind of take that middle ground where it's good, but is you take a 7. So you have to say, okay, you can't say that one, because that's just going to be too middle of the road or whatever.
Nerd.
And no halves. Well, no halves.
No
either.
Halves. So 6-6 on the season. So 10 being the most successful season you're going to have. Given, and we're doing this on the basis of what could reasonably be expected, you're saying?
Yeah. So just how the season played out. In other words, looking at it in complete 2020 hindsight, how the results were. How do you rate the success sitting here tonight?
I'd say it's an 8. Making a bowl immediately makes that. And then the thing to me that elevates this to that level is absolutely throttling. So winning, so beating Duke, you're one of your most important rivals, and then throttling your most important recruiting rival in state. That elevates this to an 8 to me. And for that matter, also them not going to a bowl, and then you going to a bowl after destroying them on their home field, and then you combine that with some of the recruiting results. To me, it's a solid 8 in the first year, in terms of development and all that other stuff. The only you would wanted to win a couple of those other games on the margin and all of that to you know, get to 7 or 8 wins. But realistically, I mean, I think where they ended up was almost as good as what you could have expected at the beginning of the year. And then to do that with a couple of the additional factors, I'm going to put it in an 8.
All right. Let's hear from Mr. Doom and Gloom, as the message board will call him every now and then, Tommy Ashley. How would you rate the season, man?
I unmuted my microphone, by the way, because I thought Siegley was coming to me on that. So a little unfortunate self-awareness. Continue, Tommy.
Tommy, you're muted. And then
Tommy kept himself muted because of lack of self-awareness on the other direction.
I know, really. Full disclosure, I was on mute. So I'll try to replay what I just talked about when I was talking trash about Mike. I actually thought they were going to Mike with the doom and gloom comment.
that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
That's what I kind of expected too.
I feel great about myself. Appreciate you helping me out there, Buck, just staying silent on me.
None of this is being edited out. None.
No, I'll leave it all in there. So it's the last show of, and it's Thursday night late, and we're late getting started. So just let it fly. I don't want to copy Jason, but I agree that it's an 8. And when I said earlier, all 6 and 6s aren't the same. If you'd have told me before the season, Carolina's going to go 6 and 6, they're going to beat a huge coastal rival in Miami. They're going to beat South Carolina. They're going to beat Duke and NC State, but they're going to go 6 and 6. I said, I'll take it, given everything else. Now, they had some horrific losses. They never should have lost to Virginia Tech. They should have beaten Pitt. And we can talk about Wake and App State all you want to, but you give me those 4 wins and who those teams are, and I'm not talking about how good they either were or weren't, but the importance, as Jason's talked about, is the recruiting and the reasserting your dominance, for lack of a better word, in the order of colleges. Beat Miami, South Carolina State, and Duke, go 6 and 6. I think it's a solid 8.
All right, so since I called Tommy Ashley doom and gloom, let's call Mike fire and brimstone, or hellfire and brimstone, to even make it more dramatic. What about hellfire, you, Ingersoll?
Hellfire. I mean, it's a – what's going to piss Jason off the most? I'm going to give it a 7.5.
Boo-erns.
A 7.
Boo-erns.
Nerd.
Well, the statistics say that if you have choices of 1 to 10 and it's moderately good, but you don't want to commit all the way to a 10 and best at whatever, but you're not doom and gloom like Tommy Ashley, it's you're going to fall somewhere in the 7 is what the statistics say, nerd.
As the guy who was looking up chapter and verse of the North Carolina law code before on air as we were
It's called the North Carolina General Statutes. Thank you very much.
Oh, well, there you go. Thanks, nerd.
Tommy makes a very good point. All 6 and 6s are not created equally. It is objectively a 5 on a 1 to 10 scale, but it is subjectively an 8 or a 9. So I'll go with what is so far has been the consensus. I'll side with Jason on this one. I see it as an 8, maybe even an 8.5, and that's because I had predictions early in the season and I harped on it. Every time John, EJ, and I hopped on a podcast this season, I harped on 4 and 8 looks like a failure, but it's actually a success for this team. And if this team can go 4 and 8 and they can win a rivalry game and they can keep it close in the 8 losses, that it will be the season will look much better and it will be much more of a success than it looks on paper. The fact that they went 6 and 6, for everything that Jason and Tommy just pointed out, you know, you beat your rival NC State. You don't just beat them. I mean, you smoke them at home after being down at halftime when it looked like Heelstradamus Ingersoll over here was going to be right about they're not going to lose the state and it's not going to be the season you all think it's going to be. They came out in the second half. They came out the second half and they just smoked those dudes. And I mean, first, take it from somebody who had a lot of heartbreak against that team. Frankly, teams that I played on, which were from a talent perspective and a scheme perspective, substantially better than those NC State teams that just happened to somehow lose every single one of those games for 4 straight years. It is sweet vindication to be in a position where all they're going to do is screw up our season, which is the position I always found myself in. But this time we came out on the other side of it, right? And we made them, we embarrassed them on their home field. So that alone made the season better. But it was pointed out earlier that you beat a coastal rival in Miami, a game you weren't supposed to win. You beat South Carolina, a game you weren't supposed to win. And early on in the season at 2-0, I'm sitting there like, well, I mean, this team might actually be a lot better than I thought. And I tried not to hop on the hype train with everybody else. I fully expected Carolina to win one or two games that they weren't supposed to win, and they were going to lose one or two games that they weren't supposed to lose. App State was my trap game, and sure enough, they lost it, and they should have won that game. But the truth of the matter is that of the six losses, they should have won every single one of those games, and it's one or two plays in each game that you can point out. For Wake Forest, it was, you know, Jonathan Smith, God rest his soul. Jonathan Smith not running past the returner on one of our punts, on our punt coverage, right? If he had just run past the returner like he was supposed to, Sage Surratt, I think, was back there returning kicks. Sage fumbles the ball. It goes backwards. You would have picked it up, scooped, and scored from the 7-yard line. At worst, you're at first and goal from the 5 or the 6. And maybe that game looks completely different, but you don't do that. They recover the fumble. Next thing you know, it's 21-0, and it's a totally different game. That's the Wake game, right? And every game had something in it. They had one play you could clearly point to that they should have won, and that was not the position that I thought Carolina was going to be in the preseason. But I still thought 4-8 was going to be a success. So objectively, it's a 5. It's middle of the road. It's exactly what it looks like. But subjectively, under the circumstances, it's a wild success, and I'm super excited about the bowl game. I don't care. I could care less. I mean, it could have been the you know, the Bush's Baked Bean Bowl. I don't really care. Anything would have been great. And any opponent is great, because, you know, this team, as far as I'm concerned, is far ahead of schedule. Now they just need to build on it going into the next year.
All right, saving the best for last, Buck. You've heard 3-8s so far. Final thought on this is yours. What do you got for us?
Well, I was thinking I was going to give Mike Ingersoll answer and go 7.5, but he already stole my thunder on that. You know, I think 8 is a good number, and I think one of the things that we've talked about, a lot of stuff, the closeness of the games, and you know, playing Clemson close and beating your in-state rivals. But, you know, one other thing we could talk about is North Carolina didn't lose to a team this year that's going bowling. All the teams that they lost to, you know, probably the worst team, worst record-wise, that they lost to was Miami, and they're 6-6. Or they beat Miami. Sorry, they didn't. Probably Pittsburgh at 7-5. So the teams that North Carolina lost to all had winning records, and you know, North Carolina is famous for, you know, every now and then throwing up a game where you know, they lose to a very poor team. Now, we can argue about Appalachian State and the fact it's a Sun Belt team or whatever it is. Not Sun Belt. What is it? AAC, or is it Sun Belt?
No, they're Sun
Belt. Sun Belt, yeah.
Yeah. Fun Belt, baby.
You know, we could argue about whether North Carolina should have beaten them at home and all this sort of thing. But, you know, all those teams got winning records, are going bowling. And, you know, the margin of victory was, you know, so slight in every case that, you know, that's just another feature of the kind of season that it was. You know, that North Carolina didn't lose to a really bad East Carolina team like they did last year. So that's just something else to throw in the mix. I think 8 is a good number, you know, for this season. You know, if they, had they gone 7-5, would that have pushed it to a 9? I don't know. Probably 8-4 would have gotten them to a 9.
If they'd have beaten Virginia Tech,
yeah,
to me, that's a 9.
Yeah.
Because to me, the thing that makes this season such a success is, who are the teams that you really have to beat for North Carolina in terms of recruiting and in terms of establishing the program for the future and credibility with your recruits in terms of the regional guys that you're going to be going against, who are the programs that you have to recruit against that in order to get where Mack Brown wants to go? Miami, NC State, Virginia Tech, South Carolina, and then probably stick Duke in there as the next one in terms of the programs that you're going to be recruiting against. Well, geez, you beat all of those teams except for one. And of course, Clemson, right? Clemson's on there, and you dang near beat Clemson. You showed that you can compete with Clemson. So there's the teams that if you're going to circle these teams on the calendar in terms of these are the teams that we're going to have to win recruiting battles against all the time in order to make sure that this program gets to where it needs to go. Those are the teams that you circle on the schedule, and especially you circle that Clemson game because you start winning battles with them in recruiting and you're a national player. But you have to start beating, you know, you have to lock down your state, which starts by embarrassing NC State, and then not only embarrassing them, but embarrassing them in such a way that basically everybody knows that Doran is going to go into next year on the hot seat, but they can't afford to fire him. So it's potentially two lame duck classes in a row. One where he's, you know, this year kind of where players have kind of jumped off. Then next year, that hamstrings that program, and that allows you to lock down your borders more. Duke matters in terms of locking down your borders. And then Virginia Tech. Virginia is within the state as far as Mac is concerned. And then you go down to South Carolina, and you're looking at South Carolina and recruiting against them and Clemson. So those are the teams that you're trying to circle as potential teams you're recruiting against, and you dang near beat Clemson, which you shouldn't be in the game with them. And then you if you beat Virginia Tech, this is a 9 to me because of that. And that's the only thing that held me back from that, because I agree with Mike, you know, even 4 wins is probably, I mean, that's progress. You get 6, that's great. You get 6 against the teams they got them against, that matters for recruiting.
Definitely. Guys, let's go ahead and take a very quick commercial break, though, to talk about our friends at Giant T-Shirt and GiantT-Shirt.com. They are your place to go for Carolina gear. If you're going to be on Franklin Street, the holidays are right around the corner. You can stop into their location there, where they have been in business for decades. You can find anything that you could want for the Tar Heel fan and your family. If you can't make it to Franklin Street, you can always shop online at GiantT-Shirt.com. Still get that same great customer service and the same great selection. And also remember that if you are a subscriber to Inside Carolina, you get 10% off of your orders at GiantT-Shirt.com or at their location on Franklin Street. You can get that 10% off code at either the Basketball Premium Message Board or the Tar Pit Premium Message Board. Giant T-Shirt and GiantT-Shirt.com, your place to go for Carolina gear. Something that just popped into my head, guys, a real quick fun game. Go around the room here. What's the one thing that you would want from Giant T-Shirt for your wish list Carolina present this year? Stocking stuffer, true gift, whatever. What would you want if you could get anything? Tommy, start with you.
Mike Ingersoll throwback jersey.
Love it. Jason?
Give me a second. I got to think, because there's so much good stuff there. It'd probably be something golf related. I got to look at their whole thing and get a good one here.
All right. Who else is ready? Mike or Buck? Come on, throw something out quick. Mike, what about you? What do you want from Christmas from Johnny T?
I need a new Carolina Law t-shirt, and I don't feel like going dumpster diving like Tommy apparently is going to do. So I'll take something off the rack with a tag still on it. Thank you.
Hey, I went to the old jersey sale, and they're cleaning out the surplus, and there was like one jersey left, and it was Ingersoll's, and I jumped on it.
Nice. Jason, did you come up with an idea yet?
Yeah, you know what? I'm a bucket hat guy when it comes to the golf course. You know, I shave my head, so you know, I got nothing there to go against the sun, and they got some quality bucket hats. So that would probably be my thing. A nice UNC branded bucket hat would be the way to go.
I like it.
I agree with that. I definitely agree with that. The old ball heads.
That's a good call. I know Tommy with his nicely waxed and shaved dome there in the Bowls lot. If anyone missed that site, make sure that you swing by next season. Unfortunately, Buck had some technical difficulties. He'll be rejoining the podcast just here in a second. But we'll go ahead and move on. Yeah, there you go, Buck.
Yeah, I want a UNC jersey with a Tommy Ashley number on it.
Wouldn't that just be the backup quarterback jersey?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, but with the name Ashley above it, that's the thing. It's got to be the backup quarterback's number, but it's got to say Ashley.
So Johnny, if you're listening, we need an Ashley jersey for Buck Sanders shipped out immediately.
that can be the new thing for next season, where we bet we have some bets going during the season, and whoever loses these bets has to wear the Tommy Ashley jersey out at the next game or something like that.
Well, what are you saying? A jersey with Tommy Ashley's name on it means loser.
Oh, nice. I do have
it just means backup.
And we'll have Velcro on the back so we can put whoever's the current backup quarterback's number on it. I think that's a doable plan.
This is a good idea. We'll talk to Michelle about this. We'll get this worked out somehow. All right, guys, next topic. What was your favorite play, memory? What's the one thing that you will remember from this season? Buck, since you talked last for the first part of the podcast, you get to start us off here. What's your one memory that you will have from the 2019 UNC football season?
One moment I don't have. I'll just pick the fourth quarter. That's the thing that, you know, probably we've not talked about nearly enough the entire year, although Greg Barnes does a pretty good job speaking on it. But the way they played in the fourth quarter, and Sam Howell has been great, but the defense, you know, played well in the fourth quarter. Their ability to, you know, play in the fourth quarter the way they've done this year has just been outstanding. And I think a lot of that credit goes to, you know, different places, but, you know, I don't think we should ignore the efforts of Brian Hess to keep the guys in good shape and in good condition. And those guys played a lot of snaps, particularly on defense. So kudos to Brian Hess and AJ Blue and the entire strength and conditioning staff.
Yeah, they have done a great job, I think, so far. And we'll get into probably more into that during the offseason podcast. Mike, what about you? What is the one thing that you will remember? What's going to be your memory from this past season?
For me, it was when Daz Newsome caught the go-ahead touchdown against Miami, and the whole stadium erupted, and the little clip was all over ESPN and all of that. But that was the moment that I guess I should back up. So that was the end result of what was actually the most impressive play to me. The most impressive play to me that I think that actually set the tone for the rest of the season, particularly for the fourth quarter, like Buck was just talking about, was in that Miami game, and it was a play or two right before that Daz Newsome touchdown, and it was the 4th-and-17 conversion when we had to absolutely have it, or that game was over. And freshman quarterback in game two of his career makes that completion, and it wasn't easy, offensive line, which was injured, that already lost Polino at that point, offensive line that was injured, managed to keep him clean for that whole play, gave him plenty of time. He made a good throw, a long throw, converted 4th-and-17, and then a play or two later, they score the go-ahead touchdown. And at that point, I thought, you know, this team might be for real. You know, the one thing that I think doesn't get talked about a lot is, you know, it's a new coaching staff, it's a new scheme. There's no film on these guys, and this was something that I talked about early in the year, is that they're going to win probably two games this season just by surprising people. They're going to win it by virtue of not having any film, right? No one's going to have anything to really study on them. So they're going to come out and they're going to catch people off guard, get them on their heels early, and then do just enough to win the game. And that's exactly what I think happened against South Carolina. Against Miami, it looked like it was going that way until I saw 4th-and-17 and the game was close in the second half and they had to actually fight and compete to win that football game. And that's when I started seeing that falling by the wayside. By the end of the year, you know, really it's by week five, and Jason can talk to this too, can speak to this, I mean. But really by week five, you've got enough film, even on a new staff with some new players at key positions like Sam Howell at quarterback, who you'd never seen before because he's a freshman. By week five, you have enough film, and you can game plan legitimately against the team. And that element of surprise and that newness is all gone at that point. By week five, Carolina was still competitive. And by week five, Carolina was still staying in the game with people. And for the next 7 weeks, it was close game after close game, some wins, couple of losses, and then two blowouts. Granted, one was against, you know, Mercer, but the other was against your in-state rival who you've had very little success against in the past 10 years. So, you know, that really the thing that I think set the tone for the rest of the year was that 4th-and-17 conversion against Miami in game two. And then really week five, when you realize the teams had enough film and they could game plan and Carolina was still being competitive and was still executing and was just getting better and better, even though they were making small mistakes, they were showing real improvement and promise. So I think that's it for me.
All right. Well, since he mentioned you, Jason, going to go for you. What's your answer to the question, man?
To me, it was initially a hard thing. And then once I thought of the moment, it was like, oh yeah, that's obviously it for me. And it's the end of the Duke game. Chaz Surratt with the jump pass redemption at the end of the Duke game for a win in a game where really they got outplayed in a good portion of that game. That's a game that they kind of stole. And, you know, they were the better team, but especially late, they got outplayed and they really, especially with how that game went late, they should have lost that game. And then stealing victory from the jaws of defeat, the defense standing up and actually making a play, and that guy of all people making that play against Duke, that to me, that kind of typified the whole season in terms of moving things in the right direction. And I also think that aside from Howell, who obviously is the talk of the season in terms of what he brought and where the quarterback position had been in recent years, and then how well he's played and what Carolina fans have to look forward to for the next couple of years. But the other guy that really was the guy this season was Surratt, and what he brought to the table on the defensive side of the ball. His ability to play linebacker the way that he did in his first year at the position, that changed that defense. That gave that defense some teeth that it would not have had otherwise, especially after all those injuries in the secondary. And that play, I think, really that one sticks out to me as just one of those where you're happy to see it happen with that guy, and also just what it says about the team and the preparation also. I mean, because they knew that play was coming. It just all of those things kind of wrap up in that play for me.
All right, final word on this one is yours, Tommy. What do you remember from 2019?
Well, Buck brought up a good point about the fourth quarter, and as you guys were talking, in the longest one or two sentences I've ever heard in my life, I had opportunity to research. In 2018, Carolina, in the fourth quarter, was outscored 80-49 in the fourth quarter. This year, in the fourth quarter, Carolina outscored opponents 106-51. I think that's a pretty incredible number, pretty incredible turnaround. Speaks a ton about strength and the conditioning and the staff that Mack Brown was able to put together. As far as the play, I think the easy one to pick is the Miami game. I mean, that was crazy. Like Mike says, the 4th-and-17 conversion there was ridiculous. I don't think there's, given what Carolina's done the past 2 years or really ever, I don't think there was anybody in Keenan Stadium thought they were going to get that 4th-and-17. And when that happened, it seemed like the touchdown was sort of inevitable. But I'll go back even to the first game of the year, and that's Wolfork's interception that pretty much ended that South Carolina game. Watching it in a crowd of Inside Carolina people and to see the looks on their faces when that happened, to realize Carolina was actually going to win that game, that was a huge moment for the program. It was the very first game of the year. And, you know, I hate to put the defining play in the first game, but I thought that was a huge, huge play just to win that game. And it sort of made the rest of the season, the expectations went through the roof. But, you know, Chaz's interception against Duke, yes, greatest individual play for sure. But I think the interception by Wolfork there against South Carolina that sealed that win really set the tone for the season and allowed Mack Brown to get off ahead of schedule, you know, and it sort of erased a lot of doubts that maybe a lot of people had.
And that was a must-win game, too, wasn't it, Tommy?
For Mack Brown, and yes, I know it's a funny statement, but I thought that game, they had to win that game to get the fan base fully on board with Mack Brown, and they got it done.
See, I just must be way more petty than you guys are, because my favorite moment was the NC State second half. I mean, even though I was on an airplane and I didn't actually get to watch it till I landed, I literally just started bursting laughing in RDU when I saw some of the plays that happened, and especially a certain linebacker for NC State who shall not be named getting thrown out the club, as Mike and EJ put it. That was my favorite moment. That entire second half.
By a backup.
Yes.
Well, let me tell you, that was impressive. That GIF will live forever.
A freshman backup.
A GIF or GIF or whatever you call it will live forever. But let me tell you, folks that have followed North Carolina football for a long time, that's what they expect Carolina to do to NC State. I realize that they haven't over the years, and a lot of the young folks, like yourself, John, say that was the greatest moment of the season. But that game in Carter-Finley is what North Carolina fans that have been around forever sort of expect it to happen. It was good to see that it happened, especially given how it went down. But those are the type games that North Carolina fans that have been around forever, especially when Mack Brown was here the first time, expect to see Jamie Barnett getting wrecked by Kay Mays and Brian Simmons teeing off on Phillip Rivers and all those type things. North Carolina fans expect that. So that state game, that second half was, as we've said already, was a nice bow on top of a very good season.
Yeah, and see, unfortunately, the results against State have not been, what they were in the past recently. But I think the tide is turning there, recruiting-wise especially. It's been brought up a lot, just the comparison between the classes. So with that in mind, let's go ahead and wrap up the podcast after this last commercial break. We'll be right back after this.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. You expected someone else? So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball, and baseball season is on deck. Greatest three words in the English language, pitchers and catchers. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does, 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick 6, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Hosts Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Deuceable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick 6 has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick 6 is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.
And we're back with the Inside Carolina Podcast for the 2019 Football Roundup Roundtable. Guys, for the last part of this, let's look forward towards the future. Tommy was just waxing poetically about the past there. Let's go ahead, though, and think about the 2020 UNC Tar Heels and how this season sets them up for the future. The schedule, I think, is going to be a little bit more difficult overall, but not by much, because you do have a tougher opponent when they have to travel for the ACC or the Chick-fil-A kickoff. I don't even really remember what the official name is at this point, but then they don't play Clemson in the crossover. So let's get it out the way with Mr. Doc Staples leading us off for this one. When you're looking forward to 2020, how do you think this season set up that upcoming year?
Well, I think the biggest thing is that it's allowed the players to see what, and I think I'm muted, aren't I? Oh, I'm not.
No, you're not. All right. I'm not editing that out either. Keep talking.
Well, I think the biggest thing is that basically the players got a chance to see what level of play they're actually capable of and what the necessary standard is going to be for them to move forward. And I mean, Mike can talk about this, but that's such a big deal to realize, like, wait a second, we can actually do this. Like, we can actually compete at this level, but it's going to take this. And recognizing that level of focus and that level of the standard that's required and building in some of the leadership. I mean, I think we also saw the development of some leadership in this year's team to see, and from some young guys, from some guys that are going to be back next year. That's all really positive, and that's all stuff that's going to come out of this season moving forward into next season. The other thing is that it really was, it was the transitional year schematically to let guys get used to what they're going to be doing next year. That second year, they're going to take a huge leap forward in terms of what they're able to do schematically defensively, for example. And partly just because of personnel. They'll be able to cover people on the outside with all the guys that they're getting in the secondary next year. And suddenly you're looking at an entirely different beast defensively. You combine improved leadership, another year of that leadership and learning that standard in the offseason, with the ability to add some of those wrinkles and some of the stuff that you couldn't do this year, both for personnel reasons and because it's a new system. And I think that's really what this year was about. That's what it's setting up. And next year really becomes the year where you try to take one more step forward for 2 years from now, which is the launch year, really. And to me, next year is that one step forward. You try to just make sure that you raise the level just a little bit more, that you win a few more of those games on the margin, you get some of those games that were on the margin and get those off the margin. And I'm not sure how much better the record might be next year. I mean, I think that's going to be a tough season. I mean, you got Auburn and UCF both on the schedule, non-conference. It's going to be a tough year. But the question is, are you going to be able to take a step forward, maybe win one or two more games, and then and just raise the overall level of play and be ready to launch the next year after that? I think that's what this year sets up.
All right, well, we're going to save Mike Long-Winded Ingersoll until last on this one. I'm going to turn it over to Buck. How do you think this season shows what the Tar Heels can do for 2020?
Well, I will tell you what I hope how it sets them up for next year. And Tommy and I have talked about this for years, and other people have too, that it just seems like every now and then North Carolina will go into a game and not treat the other team seriously, not think the other team is capable of beating them, and end up getting their butt kicked. And, you know, in that way, maybe the Appalachian State game was good for them, because after that game, it just looked, that game looked like, and people commented on it, and I think the staff commented on it, Mac Brown commented on it, that, look, you know, playing hard is, you know, is one, playing hard is one thing, but against every opponent, you've got to just feel it in your bones every time you take the field that you're going to get everybody's best shot, and that you can play as hard as you want to, but if you don't play with passion, you could easily get your butt kicked. And the week after that, they came out, and there was no question, even though they lost the game, that they played with real passion against Clemson. And I think those two games coming together the way they did, the Clemson game following the App State game, and how they both went into both of those games, maybe I'm hoping that that's a lesson that they can carry forward in the future when they play an opponent that say doesn't really get your juices flowing. They got to play, you know, Georgia Tech at Georgia Tech, and when Georgia Tech is not very good, not that they're not going to be good down the road, but they're going to be games they're going to play against an opponent that you know, looks like, you know, the ESPN FPI is giving them a 80% chance to win, and they just kind of blow it off. And as they have in the past, that, you know, I hope what they got out of this season and how it sets them up for next season is the ability or the knowledge to that every game they play, you know, they've got to come with 100% effort. I know that's hard to do over a course of a season, and there's going to be times when you might be emotionally down here or there, but I think that I hope they have internalized that message from this year, and it'll be less of an issue moving forward for UNC.
All right, Tommy, you're up next, man. Go ahead.
You know, I think if they win 8 games next year, that's a smashing success. I agree with Buck and Jason. The schedule is going to be different. I think they need to win one of those first two. I'm going to be interested to see what the roster looks like. There's going to be some turnover one way or another, and I'm interested to see how many of these recruits that are coming in this class, this coming class, that they wrap up in less than a week for all intents and purposes, how they fit in and how many of those guys are playing. I've said it and we've hinted at it on this show. 2021's the, as Jason put it, the launch year. So next year this needs to be a continuation of implementing the system, Bateman being able to do everything he wants to do on defense, the strength and conditioning with Hess and his crowd, building those guys up, and just keep the positive momentum. I kind of sound like Charlie Brown with Lucy and the football, because I've been around long enough to know, as has Buck, that if you get too up for Carolina football, something's going to kick you in the gut at some point. But I think if they get to 8 wins next year, and everything remains positive. I mean, when you've got a quarterback like Sam Howell, anything's certainly possible, and they need to get a backup that's healthy and available every game. But, you know, this bowl game, I think if they win this bowl game, that just sort of kickstarts the next season. And I know it doesn't ultimately matter, 6-7, 7-6, but I think it's just more positive momentum. I don't think Carolina football can have too much positive momentum going into next season. It'd be interesting to see how Mac manages the offseason. He won last offseason. He's won this season. How he wins the next offseason into next year, it'll be interesting to watch. I think the program's definitely trending in the right direction. I'm just a little hesitant to, you know, leave everything behind and jump on the bandwagon totally and completely. Close, but not quite.
Mike, go ahead. And from the player's perspective, speaking as someone that has gone through the ups and downs, how does this season translate into 2020? What are your expectations going in to the next year under Mac Brown 2.0?
There's going to be a hype train, and that it's already left the station, and the offseason is going to be nothing but distractions. And it's going to be really hard for even as even keeled a guy as Sam Howell is, from everything that I understand about him and how calm he is and collected and all that, it's going to be hard not to let some of this stuff go to your head. And it doesn't necessarily affect, you know, how you train. If you're a hard worker, you're going to be a hard worker, whether you're cocky or not. And if you're lazy, you're going to be lazy, whether you're cocky or not. What it's going to affect is the way you process information and the expectations you have for yourself when you go out onto the field. And if you're expecting yourself to be all world, typically what happens is the first sign of trouble, you either beat up on yourself a little bit more, or the ego hit is a little stronger than it would otherwise be. And that is what leads to sophomore slumps and things like that. And I use Sam as the example, but, you know, there were a lot of people that had big years, this year, that are in a position to maybe have a little bit of a letdown next year. Some of them are in positions where they don't necessarily have the cushion that Sam does, right? They're farther along in their career. So, you know, Diami Brown, Chaz Surratt, those guys, they have to find a way to keep themselves a little more even keeled and keep the ego in check, and I don't know them personally. I don't expect that to really be a problem, but every once in a while you get surprised. So that's something I would be on the lookout for. You know, I'm big on tempering expectations. The fact of the matter is we have an opening game. It's on the road, right? At UCF.
Yes.
Yeah. So, okay.
That's no picnic.
No, tough game. Real tough game.
I don't think they've lost down there in 2 years. I don't think they've lost a home game in 2 years. Somebody could check me on that. But
and it's going to be Orlando, which those of you who spent time in Florida, Orlando is the middle of the state. It's nice and landlocked and hotter than hell. And plus, you've got those aluminum bleachers going to be cascading rays of sunshine and heat, baking that field all day long. It's going to be a tough environment. You know, you couple the environmental issues, literally, you know, Al Gore's environment, that environment, with the college football atmosphere, the student environment of a team that hasn't lost a game, like Buck just said, in 2 years at home. That's going to be a really tough hill to climb. Now, you win that game, you pull off a shocker like they did against South Carolina this year, and you've got some momentum going into what is going to be a very, very difficult game against a very good Auburn team. They have a young quarterback, Bo Nix, who's going to be better next year. Gus Malzahn is, you know, the kind of coach that's always got something for you offensively. And it's an SEC opponent, and, you know, for better or for worse, you know, they recruit well. And where the SEC beats you, it's not they're starting 22 guys. It's the depth they have. That's where SEC teams, that's the difference between SEC teams and football right now and some of these other schools and some of these other conferences. It's just the depth. It's not general talent. It's just how much talent they have. So it's going to be a difficult game down in Atlanta. You know, it's SEC country. It'll be a heavy Auburn crowd. I'll be there. I'm planning on being there. But you've got two really tough games to open up the year. So, you know, temper your expectations. You've got a lot of guys that had a lot of success this year that, you know, are either young or haven't had it in the past. And you need to see how they handle it on a personal level. And then you need to see how that team responds. You know, you got two teams that are going to be coming out to punch you in the mouth first two games of the year. So what happens if you start 0-2 or 1-1 as opposed to 2-0 last year? Do you compare yourself to this year's team? Or do you understand that there's going to be bumps in the road and it's still a work in progress? That's what I'm looking for. And if they can weather the storm of the first two games next season, I think 8 wins is absolutely reasonable, and it should be the expectation. Anything short of that will be a letdown.
I think 8 wins is going to be really tough next year. I mean, you want that to be the expectation, but to me, if they win 7 games next year, just based on what I'm seeing on the schedule, I would probably regard that as a success. But
well, if they go 2-0, I mean, out of the next 10 games, I mean, they should win 6 of the next 10 games. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, no, if they win the first two, then that's all my bets point. Are off. Yeah.
At 2-0, 8-4 becomes the expectation. At 0-0, it's not 8-4. I'm with you. 7-5 is the expectation.
Yeah, I think you have to feel like one game better next year, and you're in position to really do something the year after that.
UNC started 2-0 this year. A lot of people thought that the expectations were going to go off through the roof. You know, they hit some bumps in the road. Next year, though, I agree with you guys. I think overall, if they do start off 2-0, the expectations of the fan base, I mean, inside Carolina, I don't know if anyone is listening to this that's not on the Tar Pit Premium message board, but it was a fun year on the message board overall. People were actually super interested in football again for the first time in several seasons. If they can pull off an upset or two, even starting 1-1, I think that the fan base is going to get all in under Mac Brown 2.0, even more so than what they are now, if you can believe it. Guys, we'll go ahead and wrap it up, though. It was a ton of fun to speak with all of y'all tonight. The technical glitches, the mutings aside, I hope everyone who's listening in enjoys. Was most likely going to be a rough cut podcast. We'll go ahead, though, call this one to an end. Hope you guys have a great rest of your night and a good rest of the week.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, John.
Thanks for listening to another podcast from InsideCarolina.com. Brought to you by JohnnyT-Shirt.com. Where to go for your next Tar Heel gear purchase.
New CBS Monday.
Federal agents!
Hands where we can see them!
NCIS Hawaii is back. New criminals to catch.
Armed robbery, aggravated assault, murder.
And new investigations to be solved.
These guys were good, but even masters make mistakes.
Vanessa Lachey and featuring LL Cool J.
Violin Island, you got it.
Welcome to paradise.
A new NCIS Hawaii, Monday, 10/9 Central on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.